The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Residue is not just another true crime podcast, but a necessary tool for those who want to understand the dangers lurking in the real world. Residue is created, hosted, edited, researched, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. If you would love to help out the show, the best thing to do would be hit that follow button and also leave a 5-star review. If you do leave a 5-star review, I will be mailing out cute little stickers and thank you notes because I do appreciate you all so very much. Just shoot me a DM and a follow on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook Residue, a true crime podcast, and on TikTok you can find two accounts. We have Residue Podcast for all the true crime lovers and Unlocking Your Memory, Champagne Chrissy. That is just a little something for all of your Gen X, 80s, 90s nostalgia needs, because let's be honest, you guys, I cannot handle true crime all the time. Thank you for joining me for episode 75 of Residue. Today, we're going to dive back in to our Tragedy on Set series. And this week, we're going to talk about the movie, The Exorcist. Okay, it's the year 2025. We all know that back in the day, it was easier for directors like Alfred Hitchcock to promote Psycho by saying that people were passing out in the theaters and people were throwing up and people had to run out of the theater. They say that about almost every single horror movie that is advertised now, and it still reels me in. I still think that when I go there, I'm going to be scared to death, and I never am. But let's talk about how Hollywood used to approach controversy as free publicity. Well, not used to, they still do. But anyway, studios know that outrage equals attention. So if people are arguing about a film before it even comes out, it is already winning. The more people talk, whether about the shock or fear or disapproval, the more curious other people are going to become. And here are some examples. The Passion of the Christ in 2004, there was a lot of controversy over violence, anti-Semitism, and religious messaging made it a global headline, which in turn made it a box office hit. The Joker in 2019, the media warned about potential violence inside of the theater or copycat crimes that were widely circulated, and that film made over $1 billion. And then we have The Exorcist from 1973. Studio PR leaned hard into rumors that The Exorcist was cursed, that the set, the cast, the crew were cursed. There were reports of fainting, vomiting, and just moral outrage during the marketing of this movie. Studios love to market their films like, "This film will mess you up." Or a lot of times when you're watching a trailer for a movie, you'll see banned in multiple countries. People couldn't make it to the end. Doctors were on hand at screenings. You will sleep with the lights on. I mean, the biggest one is always based on a true story, and that's so often used loosely. Another way to generate controversy is having the buzz be about how the cast didn't like each other. I mean, we all know it ends with us. But also, Don't Worry, Darling. That one generated weeks of buzz because of that caste drama. In 1973, The Exorcist went the route of moral panic, and moral panic is going to equal a box office boom. In 1973, The Exorcist hit theaters, and the world would never see horror the same way again. Writer William Blatty was a student at Georgetown University when he became intrigued by the 1949 case of Roland Doe, which involved strange occurrences in the boy's home and a series of exorcisms performed by Father William Bodern. So the plot of The Exorcist is mostly fictional. It draws on this general outline that we have of this boy named Roland Doe and his exorcisms. But William Blatty also incorporated elements from other historical exorcism cases, and this would include the Lou Dunn possessions of 1634. So this movie's story was altered for dramatic purposes. I mean, obviously, for example, the gender of the possessed child was changed from a boy, Roland, to a girl, Reagan. Film sets are chaotic, and making a movie is a massive undertaking. You've got hundreds of people working long, stressful hours, often with dangerous equipment, complex stunts, and high-pressure timelines. Mix that with extreme conditions, unpredictable accidents, and the occasional ego trip, and bad things will happen. And you know, sometimes that's not the supernatural at work, that's just statistics. When The Exorcist opens in 1973, the film shocked audiences. There was demonic possession, religious dread, the battle between good and evil. Almost immediately, strange and tragic events plagued the production. A fire breaks out and consumes almost all of the set except for Reagan's bedroom. And we all know that Reagan's bedroom, her bed, this was the heart of the movie. This whole set remained completely untouched, and that spooked the producers so much that they brought in a priest to bless the set. The set was quickly rebuilt, and the project was back in action, but not for long, because in his first week of filming, Max von Sydow, who portrayed Father Lancaster Marin, had to return to Sweden because he found out that his brother died. Then, Linda Blair, scream queen extraordinaire, child actress who played Reagan McNeil, lost her grandfather, and this caused another delay in filming. Reagan's mother was played by actress Ellen Burstyn, and Ellen always claimed that there were 9 deaths on the set of The Exorcist, including the 2 we just mentioned, a night watchman on set, and an assistant cameraman's newborn baby. Another of the deceased was actor Jack McGowan. Jack died shortly after appearing in The Exorcist as film director Burke Dennings. Jack McGowan died of complications from the flu at only 54 years old. Actress Linda Blair recalled that it seemed like someone was always getting hurt when action scenes were being filmed. And this was especially true for Linda Blair. During the course of the movie, her character Reagan exhibits abnormal strength. And if you're not familiar with the plot of The Exorcist, let me give you a little quick background. This story chronicles a single mother's struggle to save her daughter from this mysterious ailment that is later revealed to be a demonic possession. And the mother enlists the help of 2 Roman Catholic priests who attempt to perform an exorcism on her daughter. And during one of these exorcism scenes, Linda Blair had a horrific accident. Linda Blair was only 14 years old while filming The Exorcist, so they definitely had to take certain precautions with her character during certain scenes. Now, as some of you may know, there is a masturbation scene in this movie, and the director did hire a woman named Ellen Dietz to recreate this masturbation scene so that, obviously, Linda Blair wasn't going to be performing this scene. They also ended up keeping Eileen Dietz on for other scenes, which included the famous vomiting scene and the levitating scene. And now there's a show called Cursed Films, and in this show, they interview Eileen Dietz, and I just have to quote her on this part, just to sidetrack quickly. She said she was only hired for the masturbation scene, and then it felt like the film went on and on and on forever, and she got to the point where she said, "Who do I have to fuck to stop making this movie?" Just thought that was funny. But I say all of this to you because they hired her to keep Linda Blair safe, but they didn't hire a stunt double to do any of the action scenes. And this is where Linda Blair experiences this horrible incident with her costume. Linda had to wear this harness that would allow her to appear as though she was flipping back and forth on the bed, like up and down from a sitting position. And during filming, her harness snapped loose in the middle of this violent exorcism scene. And in this moment, she fractured her spine. This is real pain-filled footage that was used in the final cut. The director, William Friedkin, he was notorious for his cruel methods. He once fired a gun behind an actor to get a genuine expression of fear. He also ordered a prop master to yank Ellen Burstyn's harness so hard that this left her injured for life. And that footage also stayed in the movie. And not only getting physically hurt on set, but Linda Blair, she was only a teenager and she becomes the target of mass fear. The public projected evil onto her, this 14-year-old girl. She needed bodyguards. Rumors spread that she was cursed herself and that fame became a prison for Linda Blair. And eventually, as we know, she walked away from Hollywood altogether and turned her attention to rescuing animals. And she doesn't really want to talk that much about what she endured on that set. Okay, you guys, here we go. Do not worry, I still have some true crime in this episode. So things escalate in 1977. When Paul Bateson, a radiologist who had a brief appearance in The Exorcist, was arrested for the brutal murder of film critic Addison Verrill. Paul Bateson's real-life crime deepened the film's dark legacy, especially when William Friedkin used him as inspiration for his later film, Cruising. There is a scene in the film where they perform a surgery on Reagan, and William Friedkin used real surgeons and radiologists to film this scene, but he also wanted everyone who was in the room during that day to be in the film. And there was a man named Paul Bateson who ended up being in the film. Paul was a chief of neuroradiology technologist, and it was said that he was a quiet, nice, very kind man to all of his patients. On September 12th, 1977, the body of Addison Verrill, a film industry journalist with Variety magazine, was found in his West Village apartment. Immediate foul play is suspected, and a fellow journalist from the Village Voice named Arthur Bell reports that it looks like a crime of passion. It looks like the victim knew whoever his killer was. And so, after he lets this story loose in the news, Arthur Bell receives a phone call. And this phone call is from an anonymous person who says, "I killed Addison Verrill." This anonymous caller admits that it was a crime of passion, that he hung out with Addison all night. They did drugs. Then they went back to Addison's apartment, and while there, they got into a heated argument, and the caller says that he hit Addison over the head with a pan and then stabbed him in the chest. He also said that he cannot tell the police because if he gets caught, he would never be able to practice medicine again. The phone call is obviously traced, quick as fuck, back to Paul Bateson. Police get to his apartment, they arrest him. He confesses, and he says to them, "I know why you're here." In 1979, Paul Bateson was convicted of the murder of Addison Verrill, and he was sentenced to a minimum of 20 years in prison. But in 2003, he was released. Paul Bateson was implicated in a series of unsolved slayings of gay men in Manhattan. Now, these slayings were known as the Bag Murders. The Bag Murders were a series of murders of six men from 1975 to 1977 in New York City. This nickname originated from the fact that each victim had been dismembered and their remains were stuffed in a garbage bag and thrown into the Hudson River. The victims, as well as the killer, have never been identified. Jail cell informants said that Paul Beatson was bragging about these murders, saying that he's a serial killer and they never caught him, but he was never implicated in any of these murders. But as I said earlier, this whole experience that William Friedkin had with Paul Bateson inspired him to make the 1980 crime thriller film Cruising. And Cruising is about a serial killer targeting gay men. Okay, so far, do you think this film set was cursed? So far, we have a serial killer. We have many deaths, many injuries, a fire. We have a teenage actress being hounded by the public. You know what else we have to add in? Religion. Okay, so Pope Paul VI, he issues this proclamation not about the exorcist, but it was more about the broader understanding of evil. On November 15th, 1972, his remarks delivered during a general audience emphasized that evil is not merely a lack of something, but a living spiritual force, an effective agent. He stated that it is contrary to the teaching of the Bible and the church to deny the existence of such a reality. This statement was made in 1972, and The Exorcist was released and being marketed in 1973 with the famous tagline, "Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world, the world of darkness." And what do you do when your studio, Warner Brothers, doesn't believe in the movie? How do you get them to believe in your movie? Of course, a PR person was told to create a fear to bring in an audience. William Friedkin's 1973 The Exorcist practically invented scandals for marketing strategy. The Exorcist played up on everything that was happening around them. They played up on religious groups considering them to be offensive. They played up on the themes of drama happening on the set. They played up on the fact that a 14-year-old girl was possessed by a demon. I mean, their marketing plan was literally just cause chaos. And they had the idea to say, oh no, people are fainting. People are suffering from heart attacks in the movie theaters. People can't sit in their seats. They run out. This movie was banned in several countries. 52 years later, and the line between marketing myth and a real curse remains blurred. Was it just bad luck? Was it a string of coincidences? Or did The Exorcist truly awaken something that was never meant to be shown on screen? Whatever you believe, no matter what the truth may be, one thing is for certain. The Exorcist is not just a scary movie. It is a masterstroke of marketing genius. Stay safe and stay paranoid. Stay paranoid. Okay, real quick, you guys. Every time I do a cursed film set, I have an issue with my editing and my audio. I lost every single audio file on this episode and I had to piece it together one by one. So maybe these movies are cursed because the same thing happened on Poltergeist and Twilight Zone. Pretty please stick around and listen to this week's podcast recommendation. I adore this podcast, and I know you will too.
Are you into all things weird? Do you ever go to a party and all you can talk about is true crime? Or bugs? Or ghosts? Or that weird science fact that you just can't get enough of? Well, I'm Harmony. And I'm Haley. And we're the hosts of your new favorite podcast, Make It Weird. The comedy podcast that's bringing you the most bizarre stories from all around the world. Every other week, Harmony and I will each share a new story about something that we find particularly weird. Like the story of the 1920s female watch painters who were being poisoned by radium. Or the story of Carl Tanzler, the man who kept a woman's corpse in his house for 7 years. And in between those weeks, Haley and I will share some especially weird current events in our mini episodes. Like that time someone stole 34,000 avocados. Or that time a dog's microchip helped solve the mystery of its owner's murder. New episodes are live every Wednesday, and you can listen to us on all podcast platforms or watch our video on Spotify and YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of Make It Weird. Bye!